Hey, it's Doug here. This is episode 245, which that's a lot of episodes. There's a lot of shows in the back archive here. And I'm cheating a little bit, all right? I'm cheating. I'm a little bit lazy, as many of you know. So I'm rebroadcasting an episode, and it's from a long time ago. Even if you listen to the show, you probably don't remember all the details. So this is way back. It's from well over a year ago. It's with Peter and Francis, and they are sort of a case study that we can look at. So they happened to be passing through town some time ago, and we were like, "Hey, we'll have you in the studio here." We recorded, and they kind of laid out their full financial situation with all the details, specific numbers and all that stuff. And the reason why we're rebroadcasting it for this episode is because Francis contacted me and was like, "Hey, would you be interested in an update? Some things have changed. They, you know, executed the plan. They figured some other things out personally, things that are important and just many details." So I wanted to rebroadcast the original interview from well over a year ago today. And then next week, the update is going to come out. So it's like you kind of fast forward to like a full year and you hear about their amazing financial situation, again, some personal changes and things that they had to like figure out just by living life. So today we have this rebroadcast. I also want to give a quick plug for Mint Mobile. I've been talking about them a little bit in the last few weeks here. And basically we switched after me freaking dragging my feet for a really long time. And it turns out it's really easy to switch from a big carrier to any other carrier. It used to be really complicated to move your phone number and you had to pay for it and all this other shit. But now it's super easy to switch. I moved over to Mint Mobile. I tested them out for like a week. My wife was not certain if like the service was going to be as good or anything like that. But turns out it's just fine. They operate on the T-Mobile network. So I tested it out for a few days and then I signed up. The thing is, we were paying like well over $120 per month for our previous service for both of us. And now it's way cheaper. It's only like $15 per month for each of us, a little over $30 per month. And for new customers, if you want to check it out and help support the show, you could check out Mint Mobile for, it's $15 per month for 3 months. You got to pay all at once, so it's $45. But basically, super easy to switch. You could use your existing phone, no matter what phone you're using, you could use your existing phone and check it out. So if you want to save money, which I think we do, we don't want to just waste money, you can go to milehighfi.com/mint and check it out and see what deals they have going on. So, like I said, we're talking to Peter and Francis. This is from like a year plus from the past. And we're going to have a new episode next week, an update with Francis to hear all the changes. So let's send it to the show now.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I'm Carl Jensen with my co-host.
I'm Doug Cunnington.
And maybe we should call it the Maine High Fi podcast. That doesn't flow because we have two special guests today from Maine. Tell us who you are and what you do.
I'm Francis. I'm a bookkeeper and also a financial person for an IT company.
And I'm Peter, and I am running a woodworking supply store.
So today we are going to talk about Francis and Peter's money situation. And I think the focus today is going to be CoastFi, which seems like a pretty popular topic. We end up talking about that a lot, although I don't know if we've ever successfully defined it despite multiple attempts.
Yeah, it is very popular. The only time is I think we had Jess on from Fioneers.
Yeah.
She nailed it. Yeah.
And I think she kind of made it up, right?
Is that her? I think so. Okay. That sounds right.
Okay. But before we get into it, we have a couple silly questions to ask. And the first one is, what is the silliest thing you have ever purchased?
I think the silliest thing I've ever purchased is a really expensive coffee grinder. It was $700, and I don't really like coffee, but it seemed like a good purchase. You know, I did a ton of research on it, and I think Francis really enjoys it.
Yeah, I like coffee. just to clarify.
So it was like kind of a gift for her, but also like a little splurge. Yeah.
What kind is it?
Niche Zero.
All right.
My
brother-in-law just got Niche Zero coffee grinder as well, and like a espresso machine, and he like geeked out on the whole thing. So I think money well spent. Now I'm embarrassed a little bit. So I was like, hey, do you want coffee? So I made some coffee. How is it?
It's good.
Okay.
I can't tell the difference.
Which is why it was a silly purchase.
All coffee is the same to me.
Okay.
I'm not a coffee person, but does a grinder make a big difference? Like, does a more expensive grinder give you a better grinder, or do they last longer? Like, what is the difference between a cheap and an expensive grinder?
Seems like it gets all the grounds exactly the same size. So the way the water moves through is very equal. So the flavor is better. But we did a few tests, like different grind sizes. And that was really interesting because the coffee tastes like really sour at one grind size, and then like sweet, and then bitter. And so it's the same coffee, but if you grind it differently, it tastes really different.
Yeah.
Which was shocking to me. I didn't believe it would make a difference, but it does.
Yeah. Huge difference, apparently. I don't know, because you can get like the blade grinders, and then it's just like completely random. Some are real, it's like powder, and then there's like boulders in there, and you end up with like over steeped, over brewed coffee. So it's like really bitter and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if it's silly because you don't drink coffee and you don't give a shit.
I think it's a good purchase, but it's silly for me. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad that my coffee that I made passed the test.
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to go to people's houses.
Yeah. Like,
The coffee we had this morning at my friend's house, pretty bad.
Okay.
I'll say it here.
All right. Yeah.
I do have one more follow-up question, and there might be a reason Doug's coffee tastes good, and he has a dog, but I don't know if y'all have ever heard of this coffee. I think it's in Indonesia where this kind of cat called like a C, it starts with a C, I can't remember the name, but the cat eats the bean, poops the thing, they harvest the bean, and then they make coffee out of it. And Doug, am I wrong? Is that the coffee they had this morning, the cat poop coffee?
You are wrong, fortunately. Although, I hear it's good. I hear it's good. And when... I'll take it up like one level, but still stick to your poop topic change. It doesn't matter what the topic is. Carl could bring it back around to poop somehow. Actually, Mindy mentioned that to me, sort of. Is that a skill that you have?
I can get behind that statement.
It's not just about the bidets.
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle.
What's your other follow-up?
Okay, I think that was it. We do have one other question. I've always been curious about that. Like, who had the idea, hey, there's a coffee bean in a piece of cat shit. Let's take it out and see how it tastes. It doesn't seem like a good life choice. But anyway, our second question, are you on team asparagus or not? Be careful how you answer.
Team asparagus.
Team asparagus.
For sure.
Yeah. All right.
For
sure. Yeah. How do you guys like to prepare asparagus?
Mostly just like very lightly steamed with some olive oil and salt. But then we've also been broiling it with
really
some
good.
Ginger.
Mm, ginger. All right.
Ooh. And that's been really good.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Like the broiling, or I grilled it the other day. That's pretty good. Or just anything where you like get a little sear on there. Steamed is fine, but it's not as complex.
It's just easy.
Yeah.
It's for the days when you're lazy.
Yeah. And then what about you, Carl? How do you like to make it?
Yeah, I like to do it on the grill. I don't know what spices Mindy puts on it. She is good at cooking. I am not, but she puts a bunch of stuff on there and then sears it. It's really good. Like when I had it as a kid, it was a frozen stuff probably, and it was not too good. So I hated it. But now as an adult, I like it. And I look forward to, have y'all ever had the white asparagus? Or
no. No. Have you?
No, I used to see it as a kid, and you can't find it in stores here, but I saw it in Germany when we were over there. But I look forward to sourcing it sometime and trying it.
We got to look around, because to be fair, I haven't looked at all. Have you?
Yes, I have, but just in like King Supers, which is probably the lowest rung of grocery stores. You might have to go to Whole Foods to get something like that.
Yeah, I think Whole Foods maybe. Is there Sprouts? Maybe a Sprouts.
Yeah.
Maybe for Halloween, you know, we're coming upon the fall. Those seem like scarier kind of vegetables than normal.
Spooky.
Yeah, exactly.
Ghost asparagus.
Okay, so y'all are
the listeners, right? And you're here in Colorado, you're now in my basement. What are you doing in Colorado and how did you end up down here?
We're visiting some friends. My friend is going to UC Boulder for graduate program in ceramics. So we're staying with them, doing some visiting, getting some free housing. All right. Yeah. And it's super fun. They're artists, so their house is just filled with pots and photos and all sorts of weird stuff.
Okay. Cool. And then how'd you end up here?
In your basement?
Yeah.
I emailed.
It's just that easy.
It was just that easy.
Email Carl, yeah. And then you end up down here just weeks later. Cool. So I guess we can get into the big stuff here, unless Peter, any other details about the trip over here or anything like that to Colorado, not down here.
No additions. No, I think Francis did a good job.
Okay, cool. So Carl, you got this email. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, today we are going to talk about Francis and Peter's financial situation. They want our assessment on it, which they're probably regretting after we just had the talk about the cat coffee. But we'll do the best we can. We'll shape up and try to be mature from this point on. And I think perhaps the main focus, or one of the focuses, is Coast-Fi, which comes up very frequently. How did you land on Coast-Fi, and what does it mean to you?
So, I've been interested in Fi for a long time and came across your podcast through The Mad Fiantist with your podcast takeover. But we've also realized that we're a little too frugal sometimes. And so, the past year or so, we've been playing with spending some more money, seeing how that feels, buying expensive coffee grinders, that sort of thing. And I think we've both realized that we actually like working, but only want to work like 20 hours a week. So our goal is really to get to the point where we just don't have to work that much. So that's why Coast-Fi appeals to us.
Perfect. And we'll get into more details, but to help set the stage, can you share your age or relative age as much as, you know, you're not supposed to ask a lady or a man their age. I don't even know what we're supposed to do anymore, to be
honest.
I'm
26.
Okay.
And I'm 30. And I ask everyone their age.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know what we're supposed to do anymore. You know. Okay. So fairly young, but you figured out, hey, we don't want to be like as aggressive and retire as soon as possible. You hear stories like from Carl or other people where they're like, oh, you could have like just slowed down a little bit. Okay. So when did you discover Fi originally?
Ooh, like, honestly, maybe when I was 18 or 19 is when I first heard about it. Yeah.
Do you remember how, where?
No, I honestly don't. One of the things that my dad did really well when I was young was getting me into investing in Vanguard. And so from like age 16, I was kind of introduced to that concept and starting to get used to it just with small amounts of money. And so then I think by the time I was 18, 19, I was just looking for other information and kind of came across it. And one of my mom's cousins was into fire. And so then I talked to him about it and just kind of got going on my own, listening to stuff, reading Mr. Money Mustache and that sort of thing.
What about you, Peter?
Yeah. I first heard about it early 20s, Tim Ferriss, Mr. Money Mustache, but I didn't really grasp it or kind of go into it. I just kind of heard it and tucked it away and yeah, kind of really got back into it with Frances a couple of years ago. She kind of was much more into it than I was, but I kind of knew the concept.
Okay. And you didn't initially reject it. So you were open to you were like, hey, this sounds like a good idea. Cause sometimes there's friction, right?
Yeah, I think I didn't fully understand it. And I was like, oh, I just need to understand investing better. But there's a lot of really not good investing or just like really overwhelming investing advice. So I think like I kind of dove into that and ended up just feeling kind of overwhelmed by it. And then instead I was like, oh, I'm just going to stick money in my house. And like that seems easier. And like not really understanding that maybe that wasn't the best way to use my money, but it was a way that was still a good way to use my money. So, yeah.
Cool. Let's talk about CoastFi. I don't think we're very good at defining it. Francis, can you define CoastFi for us?
I think for our purposes, like what we're looking for from CoastFi, because I think that's what really matters, is what it means to us, is we're hoping to get to a point where we don't have to work to contribute towards our retirement anymore. So when we hit CoastFi, ideally that will mean we're working to meet our needs for the year. Mm-hmm. Or our needs on a daily basis. Any vacations we want to take, where we're living, housing costs, food, all that sort of thing.
And the follow-up to that is, so you want to save a big pile of money, and then you're going to work to cover your basic needs, and you let that big pile of money grow. So the question, I guess, would be, and we could kind of make estimates as to how long it would take for that pile to double, maybe 7, 8, 9 years. How big do you want that pile to be? And you don't have to say a number if you don't want to, but how close do you want it to be to full-on retirement for this CoastFi thing? Like, do you want to take 14 years, 7 years, 21 years? How big do you want that pile?
That's hard to say.
I think we're kind of like, I think our rough numbers are like 1.5 million. Like, that's kind of what we want it to have, you know, accumulated to.
Wait, no, you mean that's like not right. At retirement age?
Yeah, at retirement age. Yeah, yeah. So for reach okay. CoastFi, it was close to 600.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't have our numbers exactly.
Sure.
But I think, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So your target date, which we're all feeling our way through this conversation. So 59 is like the retirement date that you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because I mean, like when you start getting into the nuances, you could be like, I want it to be 50, mm-hmm. right? So right. CoastFi, but the target date is 50 years old. And then you back into it from there and you could adjust or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. maybe you decide, I'm going to pick up like a full-time job for a couple years and it changes the math dramatically. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So you're talking 59 and then you want to have a fairly big pile. And of course, it's just based on projection. So yeah,
totally.
It's a moving target. Yep. Okay.
Okay. And I feel the main reason most people do CoastFi is so they can work kind of hard at the onset to get that pile going and then they can back off a little bit. Y'all said you would prefer to be part-time, maybe 20 hours a week. Do you have that situation now or?
No.
Yeah. Talk about your work weeks.
I work 3 days a week at a managed IT company doing any of their stuff related to money. It's like an 8-person company, so it's pretty small, but just straightening out their finances, getting their bookkeeping done, that sort of thing. And then I also have my own bookkeeping company. So I do that right now on those other 2 days and nights and weekends. So I'm working too much.
Okay. How many hours would you say total?
It fluctuates. Probably right now it's been like 50 hours a week for the past few weeks. I think that'll go down back to 40 pretty soon.
Have you tested like 20 hours in the past?
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty good, right?
I'm a big fan.
Yeah. All right. What about you, Peter?
Yeah. I'm running my dad's business. He invented a woodworking tool. So, and just recently, I've been taking that over. I think in the past 2 months, he's like really stepped out. So, I'm fully running that. And I'm working about 40 hours a week, sometimes a little bit more, but it's about 40. Yeah, and it would be nice if that was a little bit less.
So what I'm hearing here is I think it would be pretty easy for both of you to step aside when the time comes. Like Francis, you kind of have two sort of part-time jobs now. You could give up one. You could do your own bookkeeping or
yeah.
continue doing the managed IT stuff. Peter, it sounds like you work for, it's your own thing, so you could probably back off. Maybe you'd have to find someone, but it wouldn't be hard to transition into a CoastFi, into maybe halftime when the time comes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be relatively easy to transition to part-time. I think stepping out would be very challenging, but for now that's not the goal. So I think transitioning to part-time would be relatively easy.
So I'm going to depart from the outline for a second and just ask each of you. So you asked to be on the show, you need some help, right? What are the biggest questions that you want answered from our conversation today?
Yeah, I feel like one is our housing situation, what to do there. You know, we have a paid off house, and so there's a lot of capital in there. And should we be leveraging that? Should we be looking at trying to make more money in real estate. You know, we're open to doing rentals, and right now we're renting a room. So a lot around the housing and what we want to do there. Yeah, and we both don't love it. Like, our house is okay, but it's not our favorite place. I think housing's a big one. Yeah.
Okay.
I think one of the things for me is figuring out where that line is, and you probably don't have an answer for this, but between just saving aggressively, investing aggressively, going really lean on our budget versus like enjoying life a little bit more. And we've kind of been playing with the spending a little bit more money, and it's nice, but it's not like bringing us that much happiness. So we're trying to like dial it in a little bit. And part of our issue is when we set goals, then it incentivizes us to be super frugal because we want to hit the goal sooner and sooner and sooner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so like, how do we set a goal that's realistic and gracious to ourselves to enjoy life, but also like get to Coast Fire where we're only working 20 hours a week and enjoy life even more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super easy question there.
Well, yeah, really.
Yeah, that, but a great one. Let's save that one for a second. Let's talk about your housing situation first. So you have a paid off house. Congratulations on that. And a roommate. So you have some income coming from that house as well.
Yep.
Wow, that's great. So y'all just started paying it off super aggressively. Peter, you hinted at that earlier.
Yeah, I got a house when I was 20. Like, I was just renting with some friends. And basically, I asked them, hey, if I get a house, will you move in with me and rent from me? And they were like, sure. And that would cover the mortgage. So yeah, I did that. My dad gave me a small down payment to help out. And then, yeah, I've been renting for like 10 years. The first couple of years it was friends, and then I was just Craigslist and a couple rooms at a time. And just recently we've dropped down to just one renter to have a little bit more space. But yeah, it's been pretty great.
Okay. And you said you're not super happy with the house. It's not your ideal place.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we like about it, but I think in part, like, Peter bought it when he was 20, so we didn't really know what he was looking for in a house. It's kind of on a busy road, so it's just not very quiet, and we like spending time outside. We have a nice garden in the back and everything, which we love, but it's kind of loud. It's not very private, and we're not walkable to anything, so it's not like you're getting the walkability. But like, yeah. So I think that's a big part of it. And also, it's his house. You know, like, he bought it when he was 20. He's lived there a lot longer. And so even though, you know, now we're married, we own it together, it's a joint venture, there's still something about it that feels like it's Peter's house. Something goes wrong, it's like his to fix. And I think we like the idea of moving just to kind of like shift that dynamic. And also, we're renting a room, which has been really nice. Like, the income is great, but we share a kitchen, we share a shower. And so I think we like the idea of moving to a house where maybe there's an in-law apartment, so we can still have that rental income, but not be sharing space with someone.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think Doug will have a lot of good things to say about this, but I wanted to set it up, I think, with real estate. Like, we do real estate, and Doug is the exact opposite, so you can see where I'm going with this, Doug.
Yeah, no, I tried it, and I was very bad at it. I just didn't do the math right. House that I bought in my 20s, and it was upside down pretty quick. So I just don't enjoy the process. I don't enjoy the people involved, like real estate agents, brokers, potential renters. Just, I don't enjoy it. And it's a little bit more work for potentially a better return, especially if the home appreciates. So it's great for people that are into it. You guys obviously have like several years of experience with it. So you know if you want to keep doing it or not, which it sounds like you're okay with it as long as you had your own space. Is that right?
I think that's accurate.
Okay. And then, but it's okay. I'll tell everyone, it's okay if you're not into real estate. Everyone tries to push real estate onto everyone else. But some people just don't want to do it, and that's okay. Some of our friends are not into real estate, but they don't talk about it too much because it's not interesting to hear someone talk about how you shouldn't do something. It's just not. So I'll stop there. Are you interested in staying in the same area generally, or are you open to moving or anything like that?
I think staying in the same area is kind of the way it's going to pan out.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Every time we come out here to Colorado, we're like, oh, wow, so nice out here. Yeah. We could move here. This would be great. But all our family, friends, pretty much right within a half an hour radius. You know, more distant family is farther away, but it's just really nice. Peter's job is very location dependent. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of have to stay within like a half an hour radius of where we are, at least for right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How's the housing market around there?
High.
Yeah. High. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One more closing thought with real estate is that, like, Mindy and I talk about this all the time. People will see bigger pockets and then they'll be like, oh, I have to do a deal. I just want to get into a house, and they'll get into one. And the numbers are horrible. Like, they'll be making $100 a month or something like that after all expenses. So if anything were to go wrong, poof, there goes everything. So if you do it, tread carefully. I think you can make a lot more money with real estate, more than the stock market. But the trade-off is you have to put your time in and do your research. And there's a lot of moving parts to it and a lot that goes in. Some people do some interesting things out here. Like, Colorado is very ADU friendly. So you can build a little unit in your backyard with a bathroom, as long as you don't violate setbacks and such, and then rent that out and make good money. And some people, a mutual friend of ours, actually the one we were talking about in Bozeman, built a really nice ADU in her backyard, moved into that, and then rents the main house out for a lot more money than she could get with the ADU. But just do your research and don't create another job for yourself, I would say. If you don't like being in real estate, or if you don't like being a landlord, if you don't have the temperament for people calling you up with issues, it might not be for you. It takes a special person, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So one other thing related to, you know, the goals that you mentioned, are there any roadblocks or specific challenges that are standing in your way that you're already kind of looking at?
I think a lot of our financial position right now is in the house and in cash. That's just kind of a decision we have to make moving forward. Like, we might move and downsize and then invest more, or move and go with the rental unit option. So we're kind of weighing that as far as like how much work it would be and that sort of thing. But I think right now we're like pretty heavily in the house.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, some people feel more comfortable to have the paid off house. So psychologically, where do you guys stand with that?
I was very skeptical of that because I like the investment path more. He's more into the house generally. But now that we've paid off the house, that feels so good. That feels so good. I didn't think it would make a difference, but it really did.
Yeah, it's hard to go back. I think that's the feeling. It's like looking at, when we look at, you know, the numbers, and it does just feel like, yeah, having a mortgage feels like going backwards, even though it isn't necessarily, but it feels really nice.
Yeah. Carl, what do you have to say?
Yeah, it's a weird situation. I always thought, I'm the opposite of that, I guess. We're locked in at 2.85 and I can get like 5% on my money. So there's no way I'll put a dime extra into that. I'm being paid to have a mortgage right now. But everyone's different, and there's certainly value to not having debt. But I guess the difficult thing to build on, part of what I just said, is it's the world changed. We went from being able to get a mortgage like for like 2.5%. Now I think a 30-year is like 7% or something like that. And Pete just had a great post on this yesterday. Have you all had a chance to read that yet? The new Mr. Money Mustache post. And he said something kind of similar to what we were saying about interest rates, and that people are talking about, oh, when are rates going to go back down and blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, rates are pretty normal right now. This is where they've been historically. They're not, the weird anomaly was when they were so low. So if you're sitting around waiting for a big rate decrease, you might have to wait a little while for that. It probably will happen at some point, but you shouldn't expect it. But I don't know, do interest rates now, does that affect your decision to invest in real estate? Because if you don't like debt, now you're doing debt at like twice the rate at what you could have done it a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think we're still open to the mortgage option for sure. And definitely, like, what we're doing right now, you know, how we paid off the house didn't logically make any sense as far as the rates. And so getting a mortgage again also won't make sense, which is kind of stupid, but that's where we're at. I think it does make the investment option a little more appealing, or the option of doing more of a lateral transition, like selling our house, buying something of a comparable or less price. In a sense, like downgrading, doing what people don't do, downgrading their house.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we have a good mortgage rate on this place, but I know paying it off wouldn't be like the best financial move probably, but especially for my wife, having the mortgage gone would make a huge difference. And it would feel, I mean, I would be fine with it too. I'm not super, I don't have strong feelings about it. And I was going to say, some of our friends are, they're the opposite of you, Carl, right? They're like, I'm just going to pay it off. Like the incremental gains, which could be significant over time, it's not worth it to them to have like the extra monthly expense. So yeah, it's a tough one. Okay. One other thing, skipping all around, but are there any specific influences or role models that are doing CoastFi that you have observed, bloggers, podcasters, something like that? Just curious so people can follow along with them as well.
Not really. I think I heard the podcast with Jess, the Pioneers, on here. And I've heard a few other people, but no one that I'm really following. I'm pretty much off all the social media stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like whatever podcasts come into my sphere, that's good. But I don't have another way of really like following along with people.
Okay. Got it. And then Peter, do you listen to the show too? Or
I listened to a few episodes.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
She'll share a few here and there and I'll listen to them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But no, I don't feel like I have any specific role models, you know, podcasts here and there, but not someone that I'm like, oh, wow, I really want that lifestyle.
Okay. Not even Carl?
Maybe now that he's finished like with those model. House projects.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you really done with the house projects?
No, we still have to. I have two bathrooms to finish up, a railing.
Two more weeks, right?
Get back now, probably two or three more months or longer. Get back into it tomorrow, actually. Thanks for bringing it up, Doug.
Into my corner. Summer's over. Yeah. Get back to work.
I'd like to talk about the other thing, which is way more important, happiness and what your perfect life looks like. But before we get into it, and maybe this will be sort of a setup, is in your initial email, you mentioned that you're frugal in recovery. Can you tell us more about that?
So we were both very frugal, just people naturally. And so in the past year, we've been playing with like spending more money, as I mentioned, and seeing how that feels, kind of like pushing our limits of what feels comfortable in little ways, mm-hmm. and trying to break out of just like, what is the cheapest way that this can be done? And so that's the frugal in recovery part. Yeah.
Okay. Can you give us some examples?
Some examples.
In the spending or in the being frugal or both?
Oh, actually, yeah, both. Let's talk about the frugal first, okay. And then what have you been testing?
I mean, I think one example of the frugalness is, you know, we had two roommates for a long time. I think most people wouldn't do that, and that's kind of more to get income, but really the ultimate goal is like to decrease our spending costs. So we were really going for that for a long time. We were trying to get our grocery bill lower, even though food is like the most important thing to us. Not going out to dinner that much. Anytime we went on a trip, it was always like, how can we get like the cheapest housing mm-hmm. possible? I don't do the flight thing that much. That just mind boggles me, like checking flights all the time. I can't do it. But the housing, I was always like, how can I get housing cheap, cheap, cheap? So those are just a few examples.
Do you have any like grocery tips from the old days?
Buying in bulk. Like, we don't have a Costco or Sam's near us at all. So buying in bulk is kind of the only way to really cut grocery costs. Found a few places online where you can get like 50-pound bag of oats.
Okay.
And that's significantly cheaper.
Okay.
You know.
It's a lot of oats.
If you want to store that many oats.
Yeah, and just eating cheap foods. I mean, yeah. Beans, oats, rice. Like, yeah, that cuts costs a lot.
Garden. The garden helps.
Okay. Cool. Peter, any other tips? Aside from groceries too.
I mean, I think for most of my 20s was I just didn't go out. I just made my own food. So I think that was a huge part. Like, I'm not buying a $9 sandwich. That's insane. Mm-hmm. And now I go out to lunch every Friday and I really like that. It's like a thing I do with my coworkers and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think for me it was just not spending on those extra things. And that was naturally pretty easy for me. I don't really want things for the most part. So it was never that challenging. But yeah, now they're like, we do really enjoy going out to fancy dinners. So doing that like once a month, we, like, really like that. And even though the, you know, spending $200 on a dinner feels kind of crazy, we really like it.
Yeah.
So that's like been one of the things we've been doing, and it feels worth it.
So that's pretty neat. You'll go into Portland for a date night, and just, I know Portland has a really good food scene. We talked a little bit about that before. Is that what your $200, what does your $200 dinner look like?
Yeah, going to Portland, going to trying out a new fancy place. Mm-hmm. We've realized that we like the like really expensive places because somehow they're less pretentious. They're like more casual, but the food's really good versus going out to multiple like $75 to $100 meals. The quality of the food is like not as good. Mm. So we really like to go full in on once a month versus a few times a month.
Okay. What is the best meal you've had this year?
You know, we went to Issa in Portland and they just had really, really good fennel and grapefruit, like shaved salad. They have lots of really good salads, and they had like a toast with fresh strawberries, like tiny fresh strawberries. Sounds really weird. Mm-hmm. So good. And then they also have really good fish. Like Maine has really good fish. So right. That's also awesome. Yeah.
Oh man, I kind of want to go there now. I haven't eaten, so we could just make the rest of this conversation about food. Like, tell us why you're second and third and fifth best. Wait.
Yeah, that's how, like, every time I go on a hike, like on the way down, it's always just food because I'm like, oh, I'm thinking about lunch or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we talked about housing, groceries. What about your cars? So that's the other big thing that people can save or spend on.
Oh, yeah. So I'm apparently a fancy person. I didn't know this. My friend, right. Also named Doug, he's like he buys and sells used cars all the time. So I asked him like, hey, do you have any advice? Like I need a car. And he hooked me up with some Craigslist ads. Go check these out. And I was like, okay, cool. This car is awesome. It's kind of like a Prius. It's a hybrid, gets good gas mileage. And then people are like, what are you getting? And I was like, oh yeah, it's a Lexus CT. And they're like, you're getting a Lexus? But I got a really good deal on it. I bought it in cash. It's a great car. Gets great gas mileage, but I pull up everywhere and people are like, it's a fancy car.
It is kind of fancy. What is that one? The CT? Is that like...
You like never see it.
It's a little hatchback. I mean...
The hatchback.
Right? Yeah, it's a little tiny hatchback. And I've seen like 10 of them total. Oh. You know how normally you get a car you like see them everywhere? No.
No.
Yeah.
No. So okay. Strange.
Interesting.
I think there's a Toyota version of that, right?
Yeah,
there
I was going to say.
Prius it's version. Called the Prius.
Yeah, it is.
This is, it's just like a, it's a Prius, but like fancy. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've got a Subaru Impreza and just base model. And I love that thing. It's so practical. It's a little truck. It's fantastic. Yeah. And bought that in cash. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. This episode is brought to you by GhostBed. We were just out of town at an Airbnb, and it was a nice enough place, but I slept horribly. I am a hot sleeper. I'm basically hot all the time. And the issue was that it got so warm that I kept waking up all night long. It was pretty miserable. And the thing is, we were in Leadville, Colorado. It's actually pretty cool up there. It's up at 10,000 feet, and it's like temperature cool. So we opened up the windows. We had a fan blowing. Get this, it was 62 degrees inside. It was actually like pretty cool. And I was still waking up all through the night. The problem is it was a cheap mattress. And if I could give advice to that Airbnb owner, I would tell them to upgrade the mattresses and get a GhostBed Lux. GhostBed has patented cooling technology, and the Lux is the coolest rating in their line of mattresses. And the thing is, the Lux is a little bit softer than the classic mattress. And I actually tested the one that Carl and Mindy have, and it was a little too firm with the classic for my comfort level. So the Lux is the one that I actually prefer. Now, if you're not sure which mattress to get, you can take their sleep quiz. The thing is, they have a full range, and they even have massaging mattresses, and it uses an air pressure massage. Now, don't worry though, you have a 101 night at home sleep trial, and you actually can go check out everything that they have over at GhostBed. They have a full range of products, including adjustable bases,
They have bedding, they have pillows, anything you need to sleep better. You could save 50% with the code MILEHIFI at checkout, or you could just go to ghostbed.com/MILEHIFI and save 50% site-wide.
Where are we at, Carl? I don't even know.
I think it's time to tackle the really difficult question. Oh, look, we ran out of time. No, I'm just kidding. So, yeah, your question about happiness, I kind of want to work backwards a little bit. Say you had someone left you $10 million right now. What would your daily life look like?
Whoa. I'll start with the work part because I feel like that provides some structure to life. I would probably just work on my bookkeeping business. That's what I'm really enjoying and very passionate about. And just try and do that like probably 10 to 20 hours a week. Probably like to do some traveling, like slow travel, take a month in a different location throughout the year. More hiking. If I could get in the water to go swimming like a lake or a river or the ocean every day, that would be my absolute dream. Right now, even though we live in Maine, we're like a half an hour from any swimmable water. So I think that would be a big change I would make as well.
And how about you, Peter?
I mean, pretty similar. I think with work, yeah, it would be probably 10 to 20 hours a week. But being able to make it not so location dependent, really, I have to be there. So figuring out a way to make that be remote so we could travel a little bit more. I mean, I am such a homebody, so leaving for more than a couple of weeks, I want to be home anyways. But it would be nice to be able to take some longer trips and really get to experience a place. Okay. And yeah, hiking, I love. I mean, being just staying in Boulder and being able to drive 5 to 8 minutes and you're like at beautiful mountains is incredible. I'd love to be able to do that every day.
So a couple of quick follow-up questions. The first question is, Francis, it sounds like you might be able to do your job remotely.
Yeah. All my bookkeeping work is completely remote. My work at the IT company is in person, but will probably be somewhat remote moving forward.
Okay. But in your Coast Five situation, if you just did bookkeeping, it wouldn't matter where you were at.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my second question is, the outdoors have a high level of value for you both. You mentioned, Peter, you were happy to be close to the mountains here in Boulder. Do you have that where you live now?
No.
Not at all. No.
It's like the closest mountains here. Yeah, another couple hours, like good ones, the Whites in New Hampshire. And I haven't gone in years. I used to go a lot, but yeah, just like you drive 2 hours and you hike for 4 hours and you drive 2 hours home and it's not worth it. So yeah, when we get outside, you know, we garden and stuff like that, but we don't have that, you know, right in the lake, right in the ocean or a mountain or something like that.
Okay, so now I have one more follow-up. This hypothetical $10 million question, you both want to stay kind of near there because you have friends and family there, but if you had this money, could you move to a place a little bit closer to the outdoors and still maintain those the close distance with your family, like maintain that?
We could definitely get closer to water, mm-hmm. but the mountains would be a little more challenging. A lot of my family lives up near Acadia National Park. My aunt and uncle live like actually like next to it. Their property's touching it and they live on a lake. And so when we go up there, we do tons of hiking and swimming and all sorts of things. So one possibility would be that we would go up there for a longer period of time and that would get us closer to mountains. Mm-hmm. But as far as like within our housing half an hour range, we couldn't really get closer to mountains.
Mm-hmm. Another way to think about it, and I'm not sure I phased out when Carl asked the question, but no, I'm just kidding. No, but another way to frame it is, could you move to Boulder, right? And then just fly back to visit? And there's a section in Die with Zero where like basically you have higher quality visiting time with the people when you're visiting there versus like if you could see them every day, but you don't and you only see them like twice a year, maybe it's better if you just go to where you want to live and then visit, do the slow travel thing, go back for 6 weeks or whatever, hang out over the holidays, and then you go back to wherever you want to live.
I think that's a great idea, Doug.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Anything else?
I think it just still, like, currently, you know, it feels far enough out that we're not really, it feels like we're probably going to be where we're at for the next 10 years or so, kind of because of my job situation, that it's just not feasible to do that currently. So yeah, I do have the feeling like, oh, we could maybe in 10 plus years or something like that, move somewhere where there is mountains or ocean or something a little closer.
Is that what you were getting at a little bit, Carl?
Yeah, and I don't think they necessarily have to move to Boulder to achieve that. They could just move closer where they're at. I guess it depends what you really value, if that trumps being closer to people. But it sounds like you could have it all, especially if you achieve this Coastify thing where you are only working 20 hours a week and you could be remote more, Francis, and maybe you can't, Peter, but still you'd have like 5-day weekends or whatever. So, hey, you could see your friends. We'll be in town Tuesday through Thursday, or maybe Saturday, Sunday, because that's when they're not working. And then you're in the parks during the week when no one else is and the tourists clear out. Maybe there is a way to do something like that. I know you gave us your numbers, and I don't want to talk about any of them if you're not comfortable talking about them. We could just
go for it.
Yeah, we're okay. Totally,
we're an open book.
Yeah.
Before we shift, I want to talk more about both of the working situations. So have you thought about how to outsource or get out of the business? Have you already done thought exercises on that?
Not a lot, no. I think right now, you know, it's been so getting my dad out. I mean, that's only happened in the past couple months. So like he hadn't done much thinking about that. So that's been, and it's a very, yeah, it's very hard to extricate. Been very hard for him to get out because so much is based on his expertise in speaking with customers. And that now, you know, I've started to build up that expertise, but it's like so much is in that. It's pretty hard to outsource. You know, we've been thinking about, you know, creating videos and information to do that. But I haven't thought a lot about it for myself because it's just been so recent that really I'm the one that's running it now.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. From an operations standpoint, so you're like getting a kind of a test run with it right now. Mm-hmm. So I would say document as much as you can. Create your SOPs, create like document all the stuff, and then figure out how you can get out so you're just the CEO or whatever your role is. Because it's pretty hard to do all at once, but if you're like gradually working your way up to it, then you could iterate on it and have like a good document or whatever, blueprints for the whole thing, right? That's and then if you want to sell it, then, I mean, you have to do that anyway, right? Yep. So then, yeah, maybe you could find someone who would be good to groom to take over and then potentially buy it in the future, like that kind of thing. So you're like, I'm out. They have a vested interest, that kind of thing. Okay. Yeah. And then for your business, Francis, have you thought about hiring people and having like more of a team? So like maybe you actually earn more, but then you're not doing as much work.
Yeah, that's definitely part of my vision. I only started this bookkeeping business like this year. And so it's still like slowly taking off. So I'm not there yet, but I'm getting so many referrals because in our area, definitely there's like all the accountants are dying pretty much.
Okay.
No one wants to do the bookkeeping that's like under 65. And so everyone is sending people my way. And so I'm already seeing, okay, there's a very clear path to scaling the business and then hiring and training people to do different components of the work. So I'm already thinking about that, but I'm not there yet.
It's cool. So hard to find good bookkeepers. We'll share your information at the end if you're looking for more business. But everyone on our HQ Discord is always looking for bookkeepers and other accounting help.
Gotcha. Yeah, I do my own actually. Okay. And the one other thought before we shift into the numbers and all that stuff or whatever percentages we're looking at, my wife and I moved away from Atlanta and it was awesome. We just like made a decision and we're so glad that we moved away. And I know it's different for everyone to move away from family and friends, but once we made the decision, it was awesome. So highly recommend like getting out of town. You could always move back, right?
Yeah.
You could also just test and like get a lease for 6 months, go check it out, see if you actually like the place. And if you don't like it or you're homesick, you can go back to wherever you want.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. I hadn't thought about getting a shorter term lease.
Yeah, just check it out. You may have to like throw your stuff in storage and keep like a minimal amount and make it
sort of adaptable, but
we're not stuff people, so
oh, it's no
big. We could like get rid of it and be fine.
Okay, got it. Okay, thanks, Carl. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Is it because you like living here because you're closer to me? You have good proximity to me, and
yeah, yeah. I mean, I know you're kidding around, but like we moved and we ended up in Bozeman for a few years, which was great. But now, you know, I'm at my new soulmate over here. We're wearing the same shirt. Even we always wear these shirts. We dress alike everywhere we go.
I think it's the creepy. Same underwear too. Well, we usually don't wear underwear, but that's a topic for another
still matches
podcast.
You know, yeah, still matches. Matching. Yeah.
The unfurnished basement is cool in the summer. There's a lot of value to it. Okay, so I'm looking at your numbers here, and I don't think you're ready to do the Coastify yet, and I'll just throw out a couple of them, and then I've got questions about a couple of the other ones. So you've got $100,000. Oh, hold on, about $125,000 in investments, and I kind of round it down, but to get to $1.5 million, that'll take you probably close to 30 years if you just stop now and did nothing else, and that's a long time, and y'all are young, so you've got a lot of time to make your money work for you, but I do see money here in other buckets that you maybe want to redeploy. And I'll start with the easy ones first. And this is interesting. You have $20,000 in an emergency fund. And then you say you have $20,000 in other savings for home repair, cars, vacation. So some of that sounds like an emergency fund too. Like $40,000 is a lot to have sitting around in cash. And I assume you have it in a high savings account, high yield savings account.
But yeah, we do. But we definitely have a very high cash position right now, which we're looking to change. So we'd love any advice on that. We do have $20,000 set aside for some home repairs. We just redid the roof on our house, or not on our house, on our garage, but Peter ended up doing that himself and cost way less than we anticipated. So we don't have any big home repairs on the horizon, which we thought we might. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably reallocate that a little bit. We are probably going to have a car expense in the next few years, probably to replace his car. But again, like the amount that's sitting there, we're not going to spend that amount on a car. And then we also have about $5,000 a year that we put towards vacations.
Okay. And you have the numbers listed here. Do you want to keep this confidential or can we share the numbers?
Go for it.
Sure.
Okay. So the house, about $367,000 is paid off. You have $86,000 in savings, investments of $125,000. Brokerage account, so that's post-tax, is $85,000, right? That's post-tax?
Yep.
Okay. Index funds for those. And then you have an IRA and a Roth, both with $20,000. So thanks for letting us share that. It's really helpful for other listeners and such. The combined net income, including the rental income for the one roommate, is $102,000. Per year. And then the spending, we have percentages here. Did I miss it? What's your annual expenses?
Annual expenses.
Do we know that?
I think we figured it out yesterday. It was like 60,000.
Okay, cool. So, and Carl, you were mentioning if they were to stop now, it would take a while for compound interest to, you know, catch up and have the amount in the nest egg. But you guys are thinking you'll still work like 20 hours per week. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea like how much income that might be? Like it'll cover more than your expenses probably, right?
I think it will. We were talking about this yesterday for the first time because of the podcast. We were like, we got to prepare. We have to think about this and kind of realize like, oh, working 20 hours a week with the bookkeeping business, how I'm thinking it will be set up, and with Peter working for his company in a more limited capacity, the income will probably be more than what we need to cover our expenses per year.
Okay.
Even though that's, you know, not intentional,
but not a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So it would cover it, but it wouldn't be a lot more than covering it, I think.
Okay. And Carl, am I thinking about this the right way, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have anything to add to it?
Well, I'm just kind of curious about the numbers. Like you have $86,000 in savings. And the other thing that we haven't talked about is you mentioned you had $46,000 for a future down payment, maybe for an investment property like we talked about a little bit earlier.
I think we have a couple of thoughts. I think one is being able to purchase something without having to sell. Yeah, that just seems nice. Or just being able to sell and then, you know, not have a mortgage and kind of having that buffer. But yeah, we're not sure that's actually what we're going to do. I mean, that's one of the questions why we're here. It's like it does. We just have such a large cash position. Mm-hmm. It seems a little bit unnecessary.
Yeah, I've got a couple of real quick thoughts. It sounds like, Peter, you're handy. You did the roof and it was a lot less than you thought it would be. Like, do you build too? Are you handy with that?
I'm pretty handy. I mean, I don't build. Yeah, I mean, when I bought the house, it was not nice. I mean, I've redone pretty much everything in there.
Yeah.
So it's significantly nicer. And I mean, it's my first time roofing. I'd done a tiny bit with a friend, but just a couple hours. But yeah. I mean, YouTube and some time and some hard work.
Doug and I went to a presentation from Diana, who does the Economy Conference. Have you all ever heard about that?
Yep.
And the thing I really liked about hers is that this talk is something no one talks about. She's like, oh, we're all so scared. We do the 3.5% rule. I see way too many people who are conservative. We shouldn't believe in the 4% rule. We should believe in ourselves and our skills and our community, because that's where it's totally controllable by us. And that's where a lot of our value in life comes from in life. And I think a lot of us undersell ourselves on that. If you had a disaster, and where I'm going to with this is you'll have like $40,000 sitting there in cash, which breaks my heart. I know it's probably earning 5%, so it's not as bad, but it could be doing a little bit better. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have any kind of emergency fund, but you also have this other $46,000 sitting there. If I were you, and I might be much more risky, much more of a risk taker. I would probably deploy more of that into BTSAX or whatever investment vehicle you want to go to.
And I'll jump in and make it even more confusing. So I disagree with Carl on that. Yeah, you could make 5 more percent, right? Or whatever. It doesn't matter how much, right?
A few more percent, yeah.
You're trying to figure out, like, if you're going to buy a new place, so you actually need the cash available, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I know you could sell it, right? Like, if you bought VTSAX, you could sell it, but it could introduce some tax implications, maybe a little bit. I'm not sure. There's still transaction fees, potentially, and kind of a pain in the ass, right? Or, right, the market could go down, which is even worse. So, any thoughts on that? So, let's say they're within 12 months of deploying 50K. Would you put in VTSAX?
Oh, absolutely not. If you're within like even 5 years of buying another property, I would keep that cash on hand. And the only reason I brought that up, that was more towards the $40,000, the emergency fund, and the other, not the $46,000 that they were saving for another potential investment.
Okay, gotcha. Well, and I was going to say, still we're talking, okay, so there's an emergency fund of $20,000, which we could agree on that, right? That's cool.
It seems a little bit high to me, but I don't think I'd have that much personally.
Okay. You would hate to see our accounts then. All right. And then the other is the home repair, the cars and vacation, $20,000. In that, what do you see that, Carl? Because that's like, okay, home repairs, you're going to have to buy a car. Like, any thoughts on that? What do you put that? Just high yield savings account? Or
I don't know. I would say that's kind of in the same bucket as the emergency fund. I might combine all that and just say, go with 15 or 20 and put the other 20 to 25 in investments. But this is your risk too. Like, Doug, do you know our emergency fund is like $1,000? But we're in a different... Yeah, we have a different mentality. And
yeah. So what if you needed to buy like a brand new car? Do you sell stuff then?
Yeah, we just have to sell stuff. And the other thing we have is we have the line of credit against our stock portfolio and house. So if we needed to, we wouldn't have to sell stuff. We could draw from a different pocket.
Okay. And I think though, still, if you had, let's say you do $2,000 in your emergency fund, if you had to buy a new car pretty soon, and then what the market goes down by, it potentially could go down like 10 or 15%. That's a pretty big hit, right? Like that hurts a lot. So that, I guess that's why I'm like, if you know that you are going to buy something, it's not as easy as just throw in the market and in 30 years, you know, you'll get great returns because we're looking at a very small time frame.
Okay. I've got one other idea. What if they put the whole $40,000 into the market and just got a line of credit against their house? It's paid off. You can get line of credits for pretty cheap, especially against a paid off house. And then that becomes your emergency fund. And then if you had to draw from it, you could just build back up your emergency fund to pay it off or something like that.
That seems reasonable. And by the way, I don't have a horse in this race. I really don't care. My wife keeps a lot of savings. It makes her feel better. But yeah, I'm just playing devil's advocate. Yeah, so yeah. I think all those approaches are probably fine. But yeah, what do you guys think about a line of credit to serve as your emergency fund because you have a paid off house?
I think I'm less into that idea, but I do agree we could make our emergency and saving situation a lot leaner.
Yeah,
than I think it is right now.
I feel the same way.
And yeah, and the other thing that this paper doesn't show is that we already have like all our automatic investments and savings just coming out. And so every month we're just automatically contributing to these accounts still. And so okay. I think like at that point, definitely we should be shutting this off. You know, shutting that automatic investment off for these accounts and also probably investing a percentage of it in the market instead of it just sitting in a high yield savings account.
So maybe what you could do, because the automation is great, right? But you could, yes. you know, potentially turn it off, or you could like whatever, whenever you get back home, lump sum, invest it, and then just replenish the mm-hmm. funds
totally.
Just to keep the routine and the automation up. Any thoughts on that? I mean, it's like six of one, half dozen, right?
Yeah, no, I think you've got it.
All right.
I do have one other comment. One thing I don't see is you do have a pretty healthy amount of money coming in and you have a Roth, but I don't see a 401k on here. Like you could have a solo 401k associated with your corporate entity and then you're reducing your pre-tax income. And you'd be able to put a little bit more away if you did that because you're taking like the 25% off the top and saving that in taxes.
Yeah, I think I will. I will do that. That's on my list. It just hasn't happened yet. And I did have a 401. I did have a few 401ks previously that are rolled over into that IRA.
Okay.
So that's why you don't see that
cool.
on there. Yeah.
Yeah. If you do, I would definitely try to do that. But then if you want to be even more exotic, we have a self-directed one where we can invest in other things. Like we could even invest in real estate with ours. We can't manage it ourselves. There's some strict rules if you're not familiar with them, but we could buy like a syndication if we wanted to do that, or we could buy a rental house. We just can't manage it with our 401k, which is kind of interesting. It's a whole other topic, but
what is that called?
It's a self-directed solo 401k.
Okay.
And they're cool. Super cool. Like we actually owned a trailer park in Maine outside of Bangor with ours, and we own a couple of syndication deals now with ours. And yeah, I mean, don't do it unless you really have to. VTSAX should be, I think, the default for everyone. Again, we're not financial advisors, but unless you can really make a strong case for something else, I would stick with that.
So one thing we haven't resolved is the housing thing, right? So I don't know. How do you guys usually make decisions? That's an easy question, huh?
We talk about it a lot.
We talk about it, yeah. I mean,
we usually come to an agreement pretty well on things once we've both thought about all the viewpoints. But then a lot of it comes down to how it feels. Like as much as we're very logical people, ultimately it usually comes down to, okay, does it feel like this is the right thing to do?
Mm-hmm. And for, you know, one of the main questions is like, you have so much equity in the paid off house and you're like, can this get us to our goal much quicker? Which maybe it could, but we don't know potentially where you would move into. Maybe there would be rental income, maybe not. So I think that would be like the main assignment is like, figure out, you know, where you want to be. Do you want to have the in-law suite or whatever to rent out as a separate unit or whatever? And yeah, that's a tough one because like the location is important. And if you're starting to think like, okay, maybe in whatever 5 years or something like that, you would move out of the area. So that changes it a little bit too, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, any thoughts on that? How are you thinking about it?
I think probably just to give you some context, like if we are to move and get something with an apartment in it or some sort of, you know, in-law suite or whatever, it's probably going to be like $500,000 to like $600,000 just from looking at the price points mm-hmm. in our area. Or, you know, we also have the option, we could buy something that's a similar price to us and just have it be a very lateral move. Or we've also come across some listings for houses that are like $150,000 that are just need a ton of work. And so we're very open to how that goes. But if we go with the apartment option, we're definitely going to have more house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gotcha.
Is Airbnb an option where you live? Could you Airbnb a room or part of your house or a mother-in-law suite?
Depends on the area.
Okay.
I think in our current town, that's totally fine. Some places, as you get closer to Portland, have kind of outlawed that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you see that potentially like making its way out where like people are like, we don't want these strangers from Colorado popping in?
No, not really.
I think in our area.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a little more open or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Got it.
There's a website you can go to called AirDNA, and they'll try to upsell you, but they'll give you a loose estimate about what your Airbnb income could be. And there's people here. We have some mutual friends who just kill it. Like they bought a house for $400,000 not long ago, which is a lot, especially for their house, but they divided their house a little bit and they're making like $5,000 or $6,000 a month, especially in the summer. But, and it's not like two beds, one baths. Something to consider. But again, you have to like cleaning or be able to find cleaners, which is always the pain point with that situation.
Mm-hmm. Carl, what do you think about like downsizing to like the much smaller place, like kind of a minimal starter home kind of place that you would have to fix up, it sounds like. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it's a great money decision if you could be happy there. Maybe you could even do it in an area that you like a little bit more, maybe has better access to the lake that you talked about. Yeah, certain people are okay in a small environment, others not so much. Like, I don't think I would like a tiny house or anything like that. I was once reading some, I had a psychology class at university, and they were talking about couples who moved into like these geodesic dome things. You ever see those?
Oh, yeah, I've heard about those.
Yeah. And the issue is you're on top of each other all the time. There's no separation of space. So I guess supposedly these people are more prone to marital issues because no one has their space. So I'm not going to be living in a, like a 300 square foot apartment with another person, but maybe you two are different. Maybe you're okay with that. But I think downsizing would be great. Like, what if you could recapture $100,000 from the sale and put it into VTSAX? Then you've dropped your number down to like 7 years. You've sped up your number 7 years, 7 or 8 years, depending on what you think it's gonna the time to double. But I think that's great. Or try to find the spot where you could build the ADU or subdivide it to get more money from rent. I'm just curious, side topic, what could your house get for rent if you moved out, bought something else, and rented your current one?
Not as much as you would think.
Okay.
Pretty much the best way to make money on the house would be to rent rooms. But we're not going to do that if we're not living there, because it's just like too complicated with people. Mm-hmm. I think if we rented the whole house, maybe
23, 25...
Maybe. Yeah, I think that would be pushing it.
Okay. And just to reiterate, the house is worth almost $400,000. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that those are bad numbers. I would not touch that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So I think we gave you a lot to think about. Do you have follow-up questions on anything?
I mean, I guess I want to, and I know you can't really answer this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways, which is like, what would you do in our situation? You know, given everything, how would you reallocate? Yeah. How would you be thinking about it?
Oh, I totally have an answer for that. I've got bullet points here too. The first thing I would do is reconsider the amount of money you have in emergency funds. You kind of have 40-ish thousand. I know some of that's vacation, but I would go way down on that and redeploy that money into index funds. I would consider the solo 401k. I would resolve your housing situation next because you've got a bunch of money just sitting there waiting to maybe buy a house or not buy a house. That money could be put to use in either case to buy the house or do the index fund. Now I have to read my own handwriting here. Let's see here. And I can't read it. I need glasses to read my own handwriting. But I think if I were y'all, I'd grind it out for a little while longer too. Get that savings up to maybe, I don't know, somewhere north of $200,000 or maybe even a little bit more than that. And then I like some of Doug's suggestions on how to like automate things or maybe build up your business a little bit, Francis. There's such a need for what you do if you're good at it. And if you could hire a couple people, you'd have business all day long. But I guess the main thing I would do is try to get a little bit more money deployed before going to the coast fight. Oh, and the other one, the one I can't read, is the most important one of all. It's I think even if it's difficult and uncomfortable, you should err on the side of happiness. Not everything has to be about money. If there's, I don't know, like maybe you have an opportunity to take a month or two off and hike Portugal, and it's going to set you back a little bit, but you're young, you don't have kids, you don't have anything tying you, holding you back. Yeah, err on the side of doing fun things in life. And I say this from someone who did the exact opposite, just worked like crazy and grounded out and had no fun. I'm in a great place now, but I wish I would have stepped off the gas pedal. And it sounds like y'all are already more mature about it than I ever was. So I don't think you're going to make that same mistake.
Well, we have you to learn from.
Do as I say, not as I do.
It's been paying off. Yeah, I largely agree with Carl. I think, yeah, once you figure out the housing thing, that'll like make things more certain, and then you could just focus on the other stuff. You're both young, so I would save a little bit more, but I like the slower approach instead of like being so frugal that you're like depriving yourself. And you note on here, guilt-free spending is 10%, which is great. It gives you a lot of flexibility, I think. And if you just want to, yeah, like buy something or like go out to eat an extra time or whatever, like it probably fits within the budget. And yeah, I think, you know, every couple of years you could like revisit the plan and how much you're saving and be like, okay, can I cut back hours or whatever? And I think, Francis, especially for you, like Carl said, I think if you wanted to expand the business and make it something where you could grow it and then sell it, that would be awesome. So if you're thinking about like that sort of thing, you could think about it as like a CEO and an owner, and then make sure like it can run without you. And then another company would love to buy like a turnkey business with cash flow, especially competitors and stuff like that, right? Like they can all of a sudden get whatever, 20 new clients, and you have everything all set up, and you could just sell it. And then it's a huge chunk of money. You can get whatever, 2, 3, 4 years of revenue all at once. And then it changes the math dramatically. And if you're already like at a spot where you need to bring on a couple contractors or something like that, it's just a matter of like putting it together, and then you're off to the races, really.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Any other questions?
I think you answered as much as you could.
All right. Carl, we have a request for the audience, right? You have here?
Oh, yes. So our question for the audience, if you have an answer, you could leave this on our Facebook group, which we'll put in the show notes. You could send us an email. What's our email address, Doug? Carl and Doug at milehighfi.com. Mm-hmm. Not milehighfi.
And it works.
Yes, it works. We received your email. Or leave a comment in the YouTube video. So my question for the audience is, you've heard about Francis and Peter's situation. Where do you think we did well or went wrong with our advice? And what would your advice be for them? Yeah, please leave a comment. We'll talk about comments in future episodes and relay them to Francis and Peter as well.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today. It was a lot of fun. I hope it was helpful, at least a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, are you guys online where people could follow you or anything like that? If not, it's fine.
No.
Perfect.
I have a bookkeeping website.
Okay.
Modernbookkeepingservices.com if anyone needs it.
Cool.
Other than that, we're unfindable.
Perfect. That's great. Well, thanks for joining us today. Yeah. We'll like to get an update sometime in the future.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number 1, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number 2, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number 3, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer.
This show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. So you guys have been in town for, what, a couple of days now? What have you been up to?
What have we been up to? Well, we went to Laramie, Wyoming first and did some visiting there. And we've been in Boulder just hanging out, doing a little bit of hiking. Went out to Boxcar.
What's that?
It's like a fancy coffee pastry place. It lived up to the hype.
Yeah. Pastries are really good. Yeah.
And then Peter, what did you get there? What did you order?
We got a chocolate croissant. That's what I had.
How was the experience?
It was really good. Yeah, it was a lot. From the outside, it doesn't seem like there was a lot going on in there. Then you go in there, they got like a wine bar in there, and it seems like they do sandwiches too, and really cool place.
Is there anything else on your list while you're in town?
No, this is the big event.
This
is the big event.
Doug, now I feel pressure. This is their favorite. Yeah. Doug, you should do your song. Do your Mile High Fi song and dance routine for them. I think it would be appropriate at this time. We're going to let them down if you don't do it.
We'll have to. We have been working on a choreography situation. We hired a pro to do it.
So. Yeah, I've got my breakdancing routine. You've got your ballroom dancing. It's going to be very weird, like fusion. Like they've got those Asian Hawaiian fusion work. We're going to be breakdancing. What did I just say? Ballroom dancing fusion. It's going to be great.
And we have, the tearaway suits. So
Those
are, which actually we talked about getting, the Dumb and Dumber, the blue and orange tuxedos. Remember those? Mm-hmm. We were going to get those for a FinCon. Are we still going
to
do that?
I wonder if there's a way to source them. We should. You could probably get that. Maybe even like a Halloween costume.
They're readily available on like Amazon. We just need to order them.
We're speakers, so we have to go to the opening party. So it would be appropriate.
That'd be pretty good. Yeah. We can get Mindy and Paula to wear them too.
Let's do it.
Oh, wow.